Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is free and available now for iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Weekend Confirmed.
Ignition. Liftoff.
Liftoff. Hey, thanks everybody for coming out. Much appreciate your support. Thank you so much for listening to the show for all those years. That's awesome. That is so awesome. So this is Weekend Confirmed live at PAX 2011. I feel like there should be theme music playing right now. My name is Garnet Lee, and these are some of the many friends who over the years have been in a very, very important part of the podcast that we've done, starting right here with probably one of the most important persons. He did all the production work for me for us for so long, and he has a unicorn on his shoulder. That is Mr. Andrew Pfister. And of course, next to him is the guy who's right. Of course,
always right.
Always right, Mr. Luke Smith. He now does beauty pageant waves. And Johnny English there, John Davison. Graciously here from GameSpot.com. Shane Bettenhausen rocking the El Shaddai shirt and with El Shaddai plushies that look strange in his hands. It wouldn't be a Weekend Confirmed without Plan B, of course. Billy Berghammer. I feel like this is going to be the whole show. I'm just going to run down the line of everybody. Next to him,
Mr.
Jeff Green. He's now the zombie dance master.
Zombie dance master.
And Zav D'Amato's there on the end, West Coast editor for Shaq News. Those of you who watch the pre-show video for Weekend Confirmed will know that Jeff Cannata usually has candy before the show. Surprise! Is there something in your mouth, Jeff?
Yeah, give it up for the candy, ladies and gentlemen.
So that's it. So here's what we're doing on the show today because, that was only 3 minutes. That wasn't so bad. We're going to do like we always do for these shows. We're going to do what you've been playing at PAX. These guys are going to talk about some of the games they've seen here. Some of the games that if you haven't already been to the show floor, you should spend the time to get those. The lines are long. Lines are really long this year.
Eight hours.
For El Shaddai?
No, for KOTOR.
He doesn't want to use the mic. You have to use the mic for people to hear you.
Old Republic, 8 hour wait.
Wow. Is it really an 8 hour wait for all? Wow. Okay.
Not worth it.
Ouch! Says not worth it from the audience. And then, so for the second half, we have questions from you. I have them right here. Questions. If you have any other questions that were written down that you haven't gotten up to us, you can sort of pass them to the end here, and one of the enforcers will grab them. The thumbs up from the enforcers. So if you have any other questions, pass them down here. We're going to do that to be quick. So now, guys, the conversation's happening here. It's right here. Right. Who wants to start off? Who's seen something awesome that they have to tell people about right now? John?
Nobody.
Nobody. Wow.
Skulls of the Shogun.
Skulls of the Shogun, which, notoriously, your friend who was here with you spent an hour and a half playing one game.
We did, yeah. The game that's supposed to take 15 minutes to play, we spent an hour and a half because we kind of suck at it.
Wait, what are you doing to the mic there?
Luke.
It didn't take long for their romance to reignite.
I need more than that. I'm getting old.
I mean, I haven't seen you in a long time, so, you know, just trying to get some of my swerve back.
But, okay, Garnet, Skulls of the Shogun is by friend of the show, Jay Kasdell.
Absolutely.
Haunted Temple Games?
Haunted Temple Studios.
Haunted Temple Studios. Yes.
Okay, so, John, since you just checked it out today, give, the quick overview of what the heck is Skulls of the Shogun.
So, it's set, it's undead Japanese samurai warriors in a turn-based arcade-style multiplayer game.
Of course it is.
That's a lot of descriptors. But it's awesome.
So awesome, like Final Fantasy Tactics awesome?
No, more or sort of Advance Wars-y kind of awesome.
Jake always cited Advance
yeah,
Wars.
Yeah, so imagine Advance Wars with undead samurai that eat each other's skulls. So there's lots of, you know, you get to basically skull fuck each other, which then tends to be what people end up saying. We coined that while we were playing. I thought that was kind of awesome, yeah.
But okay, the art is fantastic, because Jake was the art director on Rez.
Right. Rez. I've heard of that game before.
You heard of that game?
And Space Channel 5. Like,
yeah. That's awesome.
And this game, it's basically three dudes put it together. I mean, it's like, I mean, this is the way forward for this kind of thing. I mean, like, it's really awesome. It's a really clean, pure idea. It's coming to Xbox Live early next year. I mean, it's going to work on whatever platform they want to put it on. I mean, it's beautiful.
But Microsoft is publishing it.
Whoa.
Yes, they are.
So any platform that Microsoft publishes on.
And they're building it right here in Seattle, Washington. So John, let me ask you a question. Since you guys played on the biggest map, and it took you an hour and almost a half to finish a game, do you think it can actually be played in a short amount of time? Because look, turn-based strategy games are great, but the popularity of them has definitely taken a hit because of the amount of time investment it takes to play the things.
Well, right, and if you don't suck like I did. I mean, I didn't really understand what I was doing for the first 10 minutes.
I mean, Garnet, you and I played this game in Jake's hotel room at TGS last year, and you fell asleep.
Uh-oh.
At
Dude,
two, Shane?
That's not a good thing to say. Jake is not happy you explained that.
I think that's more about you.
So we were playing three players, and I mean it's turn-based, so it's very I don't know. I mean the spirit of sitting around the TV and playing and taking it in turns, and like the moves each take a couple minutes each. Like you get to move, you have a 5-6 turns I think on each go, and there's points on the map that you need to dominate. But I mean it's all the best bits of lots of the games that we've loved for a long time, and it's got like a nice contemporary polish to it and.
There's definitely that. I agree with you about the policy.
And, it supports up to four players. And I mean, I think even when there's four of you playing on a big map, it's going to take a while. But there's some of the maps that they've designed for one-on-one and three-player stuff where, I mean, 20 minutes, you'll be through it.
Okay, so I think the sixth floor, by the way, PAX has gotten so big now. You remember 5 years ago? How much has it changed? 5 years ago, there's like one hall. Everybody has like
giant fucking dragons on the show.
Like 5 years ago, we come here and everybody just has like, you know, like the rental table with the little skirting around it, and they got some stuff out and it's all cool. Now it's like giant dragons. And then all the stuff that we like is on the sixth floor. I'm not saying we don't like the big publisher booths, but a lot of the stuff is on sixth floor, which is where you're going to find Skulls of Shogun and the PAX 10. So what else have you guys seen up there? Who's been on the sixth floor and seen some other cool stuff?
Word Fighter.
Definitely.
One of the PAX 10. Who are the guys making it? I'm old, I forget.
The Word Fighter guys.
The Word Fighter guys. They might
be
here. They were going to come.
Are you guys here? It's kind of like a Puzzle Quest meets Boggle kind of thing.
It was definitely Boggle, because so he's telling me right off that it's Boggle rules. It's straight up Boggle rules for the two fighting sides.
Uh-huh. Yes. So there's a lawsuit waiting to happen.
that's the name of it.
You can tell who worked at
EA. Feel Every Yummy. Thank you, Jeff. That's the name of the company. Definitely worth checking out. And pretty much like John said, this is, to me, it was like... this is where you go to see the new innovative ideas is these smaller guys who sort of have nothing to lose and a lot less to spend. I mean, the more with the big companies, they have to spend more just to make these games, and that means they have to sell a lot more just to even break even, if not completely tank their entire company. So you see a lot more chances being taken with these small guys, like PopCap.
Yeah, because PopCap's real small. They're just a little endeavor up there. So I thought one of the things that's really cool about this game is that each of the fighters has their own set of power-ups. And for instance, a couple of power-ups I was able to use was one of them was a blackout. And you throw it at the other guy, and it knocks like four of his tiles black, so he can't see what they're playing. And I thought that was pretty
tricky. There's another one where every word they play is backwards. Right.
Yeah, or then there's another one that flips it upside down.
Right.
So there's a lot of... It's cool because it plays off of this idea that if you're just sitting there looking at it, it's funny. If you're casually watching someone playing, you're like, dude, there's a word right there, and there's a word right there. And then when you're playing, you're like, oh, I don't know what I'm doing.
Well, I mean, there's been lots of word games over the years, of course, and like Bookworm.
who publishes that, Jeff?
Quarrel.
Quarrel.
Another great one.
iOS.
but there's only never been one where you could just like actively dick over your opponent, right? I mean, you could sort of block spaces and Scrabble or whatever, but this is like a genuine act of dicking.
And who doesn't like that?
I got to start that website, genuineactivedicking.com, by PopCap.
Yeah, don't Google
the
jar. We don't have a jar.
Yeah, where is the pig?
Bring the pig back. Hey, you know another game that's up there is Alexander Bruce's Antichamber, which used to be Hazard, the game of life. If you haven't checked this out, you absolutely should go see this game. Have any of you guys seen that? Okay, you have to go see this. Why have you not gone? I've only been talking about this game for like 6 months. You must go see it. Alexander Bruce is from Australia, and he's up here, so it's a great opportunity to go talk to him about the game he's building. It's Unreal Engine, but it is unlike anything you played in Unreal Engine before.
Is this the esoteric first-person art shooter? But not
it's
really
not even a shooter.
Yeah,
it's
not even a shooter.
Yeah. So it's basically a non-Euclidean geometry first-person adventure game that tries to... that plays with your mind in a series of logic puzzles. So, for instance, you might come to a binary choice that starts a loop, and you go one way, and it loops you back to the same spot. You go another way, and it loops you back to the same spot. And ultimately, you decide, well, wait, what happens if I go backwards? And you go backwards, and it moves you into the next space. So it forces you to think outside of the traditional, oh, I'm just running down a hall, and I'm going to shoot the next thing. And it's very interesting because it's all done in very, very primary, like, you know, it's all white with black line art and primary colors. Super, very, very, very cool indie game. Alexander's been working on it for a while. He's getting it closer now to a release. So check that out. You should totally check out Antichamber. What else have you guys been playing?
I saw a little indie game called Skyrim. Oh. Anyone seen? It's by an upstart. I think they're new here.
Is that iOS?
I think so. Yeah. It might be soon. I'm not entirely sure. But so I had an hour meeting at a press booth, and I sat down and picked up the controller and did some create a character stuff. And then I looked at my watch. It was 2 hours later, and I was there. And I, at one point, I get out of this mine, and I kill a guy, and he rolls down the mountain and keeps rolling down, ragdolling down this giant mountain, and I hear laughing behind me. I turn around, it's Todd Howard and Pete Hines and all the Bethesda guys laughing their asses off. And there's just all these little touches about, you know, how much detail they put into things. Like, there was, when I entered this mine after killing a bunch of bandits, there's this blind guy who's sitting there, and he asks, you know, who are you? And you're like, oh, I'm on your side, or you could just kill him. And he's reading a book, which is kind of difficult when you're blind. And so I rolled up and I stole the book and I looked at the book. The pages were blank. So I guess it's like the best book ever for him. He uses his mind's eye or some shit. I thought, honestly, what can you say? I mean, I think every single show we come to and we see Skyrim, everyone goes crazy for it. And it was just great to finally be able to play it. Has anyone actually been able to play it yet? Yeah, you guys know what I'm talking about. We're going to go hang out later. It's cool. So it's... It's awesome. You should check it out. Bethesda, they're new. So, yeah.
What do you guys think about the way the big publishers have now moved into PAX and really changed some of the complexion of the main show floor here? Are you guys cool with that? Do you think it's a good thing?
I think it was just inevitable. I mean, once they saw that this is where all the fans were going, of course they wanted to be here, right? I mean, at first, all the big publishers totally ignored this show.
Yeah.
And if you suggested the idea, it was just like, what even is that? They didn't know what it was. But of course, once they start seeing 60,000 people coming, they're like, this is where we have to be.
Yeah.
So it was just inevitable.
I think the PAX East expansion really changed things as well. Yeah. I mean, PAX East is, I mean, it was so big the first year that they had to move it to a brand new venue that was twice its size. And that, I mean, there's even talk of them doing a third trade show. Some people are saying it might be international. We don't know exactly where it's going to be.
Detroit.
But,
PAX Detroit.
PAX Detroit. PAX Detroit. It's just going to be RoboCop games in Deus Ex. That's exactly what it's going to be.
But I think the thing is, like, all of us in the industry and journalists, like, we're all happy about the success of PAX.
Because, oh, absolutely.
Because
without
it's
doubt.
So much better than a show like E3, which is basically just like, you know, raging douchebags, yeah. You know.
Us.
Yeah, you know, this is actually, you know, the fans who we'd rather talk to. So.
But even so, even though that the big publishers, you know, you go into the main hall and, you know, you got EA in the middle and Ubisoft and all that, you hit around the corners and that's where a lot of the real nuggets of awesome are in the show. And like, well, the layout is kind of screwy because you'll go down one hall and you don't even know what's on the other end. It could be food, it could be games, and all of a sudden you see some really small game that, you know, someone will talk about tonight. It's cool. I mean, everybody has their own space here, which I think is fantastic.
Speaking as a raging douchebag, I agree.
You would say that.
Well, last year, Bastion, right? Bastion was what broke out at PAX. PAX 10. Or maybe it was PAX East, was it?
No, it was PAX last year.
It was last year.
Right. None of us knew what it was, and I think it's because of PAX and the success it had that it broke out the way it did.
I think the big change I see this year on the show floor are a lot of huge, important, big, popular booths for free-to-play games, such as League of Legends and World of Tanks and StarCraft.
Firefall.
Have you seen that logo?
Okay, so you know what? That's a really interesting point, because Firefall is right there where what used to be the headquarters for indie games at PAX, right? And there's two booths holding on in that space that
Firefall's that entire hole, isn't it?
No, it's not. And that's the problem, is it looks like
PAX,
it is.
Firefall. All there.
That's part of the problem, is it looks like it is, right? But there are two OGs there. There's Behemoth right at the front of there that's getting dwarfed, and Twisted Pixel. And Twisted Pixel is like underneath the overhang of these guys. And I'm like, does anybody even know Twisted Pixel is here? Because they are totally dwarfed by this.
But I think Firefall was smart to go so big here, because this is a community-focused show, and that's a community kind of game, and it's getting tons of press.
But if you're Twisted Pixel, how do you feel about that?
I'm probably glad that I have shade. Seriously. Gets pretty warm in there.
And fog machines. They crank up the fog machines, so you got that.
Who doesn't like a little fucking fog? Seriously.
All right, so to everybody who's out here, if you haven't been to Twisted Pixel, I want you to go check out Twisted Pixel, because not only do they have Mistsplosion Man, they also have Gunstringer, which you can play. And Gunstringer is one of the first games, I think, that's gotten an interesting take on how to do connect-controlled player action game. And the conceit's really simple. It's a marionette. So you hold your hand out as if you're holding the marionette. If you're listening and you're not here where you should be here, that's your problem in the first place, is I'm holding my hand out like I'm holding a marionette tree, and then you're controlling the character by holding the marionette tree and moving it side to side. And they even have included, if you play it, it's one of the cool things you'll notice, is that when you move your hand back and forth, there's actually physics built into the strings that are controlling the marionette. So there's a little bit of a delay, and you have to plan some of that out and control in how you're doing the control. It's really fun. It's one of the first Kinect games, I think, other than Child of Eden that I've really gotten into, I think. You guys, anyone tried Gunstringer? You guys need to get out and play more games. Do you guys play games ever?
Nope. Some of us are actually working the show, Garnett.
I like that it comes with Fruit Ninja.
It does. It really does. He's like, I like that it comes with Fruit Ninja. Fruit Ninja, good. Jeff Cannata, what have you been playing?
I think, other than Skyrim, which I want to steal and bring home, I think my game of the show is WildStar.
What is that?
Now you got
MMO.
Me.
NCSoft MMO. It is cartoon-like world. It looks like if Ratchet and Clank was an MMO. It's got that kind of Pixar, exaggerated, cartoony look. And it's got platforming. It's got double jump.
Wow.
It's got a dodge mechanic in an MMO. It's got awesome, weird classes like a spell slinger, which is a gun slinger that also does magic. So you don't have to choose between using guns and using spells. It's pretty sweet. And it's really, really addictive right away. It's they just announced it, I think, at Gamescom. Could be wrong. And it's already playable, and it already looks really good. And there's class types like the Explorer, where you get rewarded for finding out-of-the-way places, which is what more MMOs should be doing. More MMOs should be about exploring the world rather than just grinding and killing things. I love that idea, and I love the look and feel of the game. It blew me away, and I didn't want to stop playing it.
Luke, you might make games now, but I know you've been playing a game this week.
Not at PAX, though, so I feel like it's not very...
Dude, it's totally valid. People want to know what the Luke's been playing. What has the Luke been playing?
So this week, in addition to taking a day off of work to play it, I spent a bunch of time playing Deus Ex Human Revolution on the PC.
On the PC?
Is it
good? How are the load times?
So they actually patched the load times this week, so they're like, they're like 6 seconds now if you have a computer that's meant for an adult. Rather than like... Friend like a kiddie one that like Peggle runs on.
Right. I see how it is.
Well, see, I saw the commercial the other day and I was like, that game looks like Metal Gear Solid. It looks like it is like Metal Gear Solid.
Yeah, it's like if Metal Gear Solid and Blade Runner fucked and it was covered in like yellow green.
I'm sold. Like,
I actually said it was green earlier today and I was told that it was yellow and I'm colorblind, so it looks green to me.
All right. What else have you guys been playing? Andrew, what have you seen here that you thought was pretty cool?
I've only gotten to play one game so far.
And did you like it?
It's SSX.
Oh, and nice. Oh, yeah.
You've had a conflicted kind of experience with this SSX.
The E3 show that we can confirm after E3, I kind of railed on it. It wasn't really quite ready to show, I thought. It's made some pretty big leaps and bounds since then. But I don't know if it's just me being rusty at SSX or something with this particular demo level. And Billy's played it, and we might get into a fistfight over it.
I played it for about an hour. I just kept getting in line and
Feel that flow. I got disoriented a lot. There was a lot of bumps taking me off my lines. I wasn't quite so locked.
Well,
it was a little too realistic, except you couldn't fall
off the board.
You
probably hit like restart because you can back out and you can choose which board you use. So if you want something that has tighter control, and you'll at least I thought the initial board, whatever the default board was a little too loose. But once I had a tighter feeling board, I felt like I had a lot better control over everything, and I was having some pretty sick runs. It was really good. That's snowboard lingo. Yeah. Sick.
I didn't really have that many problems with the controls. It felt like SSX, except for my runs down the hill. I get disoriented. I wasn't quite sure where the gravity was pulling me because the camera would swoop around. But hopefully that's all stuff they can still work on.
The online stuff I think is really exciting because they're borrowing the Autolog sort of system from Need for Speed. So say you have a really, really good run and you post a really good time, all your friends could try to beat that, and if they don't, you get more in-game currencies while you're not playing. So you could come back after you...
So it's like Eve.
I haven't played that. But, because you have to buy new boards, new equipment, new things like that. So we have had a lot of discussion over this game since EGM put it on the cover back in the day, but... I've been waiting for a next-gen SSX for a very long time, and finally got it. They got away from the Call of Duty, Darkness, Survival, whatever the hell that was in the beginning, and got to back to the roots of what SSX was.
Dude bro boarding.
Well, I got to back what SSX was, with big fireworks and Ubers and...
That's the way it needs to be, I totally
agree.
You know I agree.
Is that right?
This is an EA game.
I thought it was awesome.
Do you still have the shirt on?
I do still have the shirt on. Do you want me to strip?
Yes. Are you kidding me?
It's all we've been waiting
That's
for.
Why you're here.
That's why I'm here.
Is Peter Moore making you get a tattoo?
Hey, did any of you, while he's disrobing... Oh, look at that. Look at that. There he is, the man's property.
Kind
of
a big change from last year when you were on this podcast.
I wore it last year, too?
No, you had, finding work.
Let's not talk about that. Yeah.
You know there is no escape once you go in.
I have that sign.
Once you go in.
Did anybody else see Borderlands 2?
I did today. Also looked fantastic.
And?
Yeah. It's interesting. Sorry, Billy.
Oh no, go ahead.
We saw Borderlands 2 back to back with Rage. Rage first.
Yes.
And Rage, my God, it's a gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous game, and I was loving it.
How gorgeous is it?
Three gorgeouses, turns out.
Gorgeous. It's engorged with gorgeousness.
Where's the pig? The
it's a unicorn.
And yeah, I was loving it. I was having so much fun. And then we went directly from there to Borderlands. And I was reminded all the tiny little things that they do in that game that are visceral, wonderful feedback to let you know that something good is happening. Just seeing the damage you're doing on things like cascading off like raindrops, or how when somebody dies, they explode into loot. Or how when you open a chest, it kind of goes vooch, vooch. And then when you pick up ammo, it sucks towards you. It's just those small little touches that make you go, loot is awesome, and I love being in this world, and I need to keep going and get more guns, more guns, more guns.
Well, it also feels that with Borderlands 1, they were kind of testing the waters in that realm because people have tried that style of game before and none have really succeeded. But, Borderlands 1 was really good, but it obviously had some issues, but it was early. But this, it also seems like with Borderlands 2, it's something about Gearbox where they're like, you know what, this sounds really fucked up, let's try it. Oh, wow, this is really cool, let's do it. And they seem to have done that a lot with Borderlands 2, taking a lot of freedom. You can dual wield now with one of the character
which
classes,
is going to be awesome. Dual wielding is always awesome.
Who doesn't want to dual wield two rocket launchers? Or a shoddy and a rocket launcher. I mean, that sounds...
If you do, you lose your gamer card right now.
Yeah, it sounds fantastic. And they've also, you know, the art style is still there, but it kind of has a weird take on
they
Americana.
They color.
Well, yeah, they did. They have green. They even said they're like, look, green and blue. It's not brown and
I kind of like it. I mean, one of the things, I mean, Rage, I'm really interested to play it, but I just find it so depressing. Like, it's like, oh, God, the world.
It's raging.
Everything is just fucked. And like, you know, and you're in this fucked up Jeep, and then you're going to go, and there's zombies, and it's just like, I don't know. I just find, I like the humor of Borderlands still, and the fact that, along with the kind of celebration of like, wow, you just did something awesome, which I don't get the sense from Rage.
You like your post-apocalyptic wasteland to be like whimsical?
Whimsical and happy. And... wow, this thing is eating your brain, but that's okay.
Pink to me, I'm dancing.
It's pink and the sky is blue and everything's lovely. But no, I think, but there's a joy to Borderlands, I think, that is just missing from Rage. Like Rage, I just find kind of like, ugh.
Well, maybe Rage needs to steal some of the color from Trine 2 and put it in there.
There you go.
Trine 2 is using all of the colors.
All of the colors.
And then some.
Yeah, and it's also very cool.
So, Jeff, tell me that since much as you were, like, regaling us with the loot stories, that you did check out Torchlight 2.
Oh, yes.
And?
It's awesome. It's awesome.
It's so funny.
It's $20, and it's awesome, so definitely buy that.
Yeah, for $20.
Yeah, I mean, it's so much better looking than the first Torchlight, which was already a pretty game. But I think they've kind of pulled back a little bit from the exaggerated cartooniness, and it's a little bit more badass than it used to be.
Oh, definitely.
Did they add multiplayer?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Four-player co-op.
And they nailed, like, equipment management much better this time, like the fact that armor sets actually mean something now. And,
absolutely.
Like, it just seems far more cohesive with everything. The loot that you're collecting feels like it has more purpose. I need to go in closer.
Yes. Yeah. And the funny thing is,
when does that come out?
That comes out this fall.
Yeah.
As much as I pushed them for information, they were not going to tell me when, but they said before Christmas. And the funny thing is that this game is way more polished. They're putting that sounds bad because the game is polished in the first place. This game is really polished. Has a lot of thought.
Checking Facebook. Someone ask him something.
And it's almost like
I was just seeing what my friends were saying about PAX. And what,
like,
game, what games they play.
And what do they say? Nothing.
There was a lot of butthurt and people waiting in lines and being upset about it. So. Sorry.
Well, Garnet, I have three.
Don't overlook Torchlight 2 just because it's awesome and the game before it was awesome. It's still awesome.
I think it is as big an iterative leap as from Diablo to Diablo 2. It looks like that big of a universe expansion,
yep.
Different kinds of areas. It really looks great.
Yes, Shane.
I was going to say I have three little weird games I want to talk about.
Okay, hit it.
One of them is in my booth, which is booth 3833. And it's called Magical Drop 5, and it's a sequel. Thank you, one person.
Applause for Magical Drop 5.
Magical Drop is like one of the best dropping block puzzle games of all time from the 90s, and Data East got bought out by this crazy Japanese cell phone company that didn't know what to do with it, and took like two...
Data East? Like Bad Dudes Data East?
Yes.
Nice.
And it took me like a year and a half to convince them to license out any of the games. They didn't want to do anything with any of their IP, and eventually they let us do Magical Drop, and it's coming out for Steam and PSN, XBLA, four players, it's only $5, it's awesome. All right, next up I want to talk about Lollipop Chainsaw, which is playable here, which is...
Whoa, hold on. Lollipop Chainsaw is playable here? Where is that?
Warner Brothers. And I got to say, it's early.
Oh, I'm getting on that.
But I only played a little bit. It's a little bit Onechanbara, but you like that.
I don't know.
What are you saying? What are you saying there?
Check it out. To me, it's a little obvious, and it's not. It seems early. I want it to be awesome. We'll see if it ends up being awesome. They're giving out like foam chainsaws.
Anyway. Did you know their bullet hell shooter is also playable back in the corner?
Oh, that's there?
Yeah, it's
I didn't see that.
It's in one of the halls. Like you're like walking down all these aisles, and like here was like I was like, wait.
The German grasshopper manufacturer shooter, that thing?
Yeah, that's what is it? The Cine Mora?
Yeah,
or
yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I gotta go find that.
It's pretty crazy.
The last one is a booth that's next to ours, and I walked past it. And I was like, that can't be Meridian 59 from 1994, whoa. Can it? Oh wait, it is the first MMO ever. 17 years ago.
Yep.
Like the company went out of business and the fans kept pirate servers going and the fans are still keeping it going and the fans brought it here, paid for that booth. It's all fans in that booth.
Really?
And it's free to play
That's
now.
Unbelievable.
It's unbelievable. Wow. It's a story. No one's covering it. I'm like, this is the true story of PAX. This is like
definitely
so grassroots. Like this is before Ultima Online. It's
proper
still going. That. Crazy.
That is really cool. Okay, so we got questions, but before we wrap it up, I want to ask one more question of you guys. Did anybody else check out It's pretty cool that a new game was announced at PAX. That would be Kim Swift's Quantum Conundrum.
Portal?
Quantum Conundrum. It's Quantum Conundrum, damn it. It is not Portal. Did you check it?
Portal with a pink hat?
I'm saying, look, okay, so there's some family resemblance. Are you upset that there's family resemblance?
No, it looks cool.
Did anyone else get to check it out? Man, you guys, we got to get you out to play some more games. We really have to.
Wait a minute.
Square Enix.
Wait. You're the one who did the fucking schedule for Shaq News.
Well,
and you're the one who put you on that game. So how am I supposed to go check this out?
I don't know.
That's right.
How much money you got? All right, so since you compared it to Portal, I feel like obliged to give a little explanation of it. The idea is it obviously borrows a lot of ideas from Portal in that it is test chambers, but now they're like rooms inside a laboratory. But the catch is that instead of you having a gun where you're blasting portals in and out of it, it's much more physics-based. If you think about the end of Portal 2 when they added the gels, that really started to introduce a new sort of game mechanic. So here the game mechanic is based off of each room has a dimensional... like this device that will rip dimensions apart and allow them to open into new dimensions.
What do you call that when you open something between two dimensions?
It's a portal. Yeah. Sorry.
I'm going to put a portal underneath you right there.
Yeah.
I'm going to put a portal right there.
And I'm going to come out wearing a pink hat.
Yes.
It's Luke. I'm back. I'm different. Same shit.
All right. Anyway, so you collect batteries, and the different batteries control which... dimension you open into. So for instance, there's a light blue portal, a light blue battery.
Oh, shit.
And then you come out and there's a red on the other side.
And if you win the game, you don't get sued.
Right? And the light blue battery opens the fluffy dimension, and it turns everything into like overstuffed pillows. So real quickly, you get the other ones that you might open, one of them reverses gravity. So you could do something like you come across a safe. The safe is heavy. You can't lift it. You turn it into fluffy, and you pick it up and throw it now while it's fluffy. And then you reverse gravity, and you're able to make it, you know, rise up and keep going. And then you turn gravity back on, and it keeps going. And you rise it up, and so you're switching back and forth with gravity on and off. And then you turn it back to normal world, and now it's a solid safe, and it crashes through a glass window.
I just have a question while you're going through all that. I couldn't help but think that when this game comes out a year from now or whenever it comes out, how many game journalists are going to be like looking up thesaurus.com and looking for words that they can't use other than portal, because I'm sure part of the PR plan for this game is like, well, when you review our game, just, you know, don't use the word portal.
Interdimensional rift.
There you go.
When I use the IDR, there you go. You still got it.
You can go ahead and probably write that one down as another time that Luke was right, but. Suffice it to say, it's still a fun game. I mean, the fact that it has family resemblance is not a big deal. We loved Portal. We love Portal 2. Why not make a new twist on it? It's cool. I liked it. So there. What are you going to do about that?
Hey, but before you go to the questions, and since we're mentioning Portal, I just want to mention that Dan Trachtenberg is here. And if you have not seen Dan's Portal No Escape
video, everybody's seen Dan's movie, right?
You should leave immediately. That is amazing. Check it out. It's on YouTube.
All right, Shane, I'm putting you in the crosshairs on the first question here. This one is Alex from Canada and wants to know, this is a question about, if you guys who don't know, Shane is a huge video game collector, has a fantastic collection of video games, and he wants to know if you have any restrictions that you put on yourself for collecting to keep it from getting completely, you know, out of control. How do you do your collection? What's your collection about?
Luke gave me the answer, like, nah, I make it rain all the time. No, I pretty much stopped collecting old weird shit, like, 5 years ago. I used to be able to go to Japan and I'd be like, I need to buy the Laser Active and I need to buy a Pippin and I need to buy a PCFX. And you get it home, you spend hundreds of dollars and it's not really as fun as you thought it was going to be. So I kind of, like Chris Kohler, he still does that. He goes to weird countries and buys all the weird shit. And like, I kind of vicariously live through him because ultimately, like, the more you move, you have to move all that stuff again. And yeah, I mean, I still.
I have a restriction. It's called a wife.
Yeah, I don't have that yet, so I definitely have slowed the collecting down to an extent.
Yeah, but you have everything. You have, like, almost all of it.
Well, I never get rid of anything, so that's the thing, too, yeah. I do occasionally still buy an old weird game when I find it, but I don't go seeking them as much.
Moving is a big thing, because when I moved to Los Angeles from Toronto, I had to sell all of my stuff.
Oh.
It was a little heartbreaking, but that's... And my soul.
In America.
Well, that was a long time
when
ago.
You get to
but
America, we'll make you start over.
Yeah, exactly.
It's going to be a shame when we have him deported.
Yeah.
Do any of you other guys collect games at all? I mean, like, for instance, I'll keep some stuff. I have a few choice For instance, a few choice PlayStation 1 games that I kept, but I didn't keep many of my PlayStation 1 games. I have a few Genesis cartridges that I kept, but I didn't, you know, I don't even know what the hell happened to the rest of them, to be honest.
I keep sentimental stuff. Like, when I went my one time to Japan, I found a sealed Chrono Trigger Japanese version of it, which I'm probably not rare or anything, but it's my favorite game of all time, so to have that be displayed, it's pretty cool.
I still do have my Chrono Trigger strategy guide from when I was a little kid, because I've told the story where I grew up, we didn't have a lot of money, so I would save money to buy strategy guides and read about the games. And I still have that strategy guide that I bought in like 1995.
I still have How to Win at Super Mario Brothers, that 1986 like mini pamphlet that shows all the maps.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
But I love the idea of Zav not having games, instead like the simulation, like imagining the game, like this poor.
A game.
You're like Oliver Twist on the street corner, like to be playing the game.
You know, it's. You know, when you grow up poor and you can't actually afford to keep the power on all the time, it's hard to buy a system and then the game, so I would just read
You're like
about
the kid
it.
At the arcade pretending to play and having a good time.
I would do the exact same thing. I would have another book. It's like, I can't remember, that black cover and a bunch of NES games like Rygar and all these games that I'm never going to be able to play, but just to like look at it and read about it. That's how you learn about them.
You actually get that from a poor kid strategy guide about how to be poor effectively.
Yeah.
Instead of buying us the consoles, my parents actually would just get us the empty boxes and have us open it on Christmas morning and then laugh. Yeah. Thanks, Mom.
Hey, you know, as we're sitting here talking about this, you know what I'm reminded of? Jeff Green's office. You used to have some of the most amazing stuff on top of your cabinet. What was your favorite thing out of that junk you had up there?
Oh, God.
You should have seen it, guys. Like, really, it was amazing. Like, he had, I know the one that stood out to me was you had a boxed copy of Rihanna Rouge up there.
Wow.
Was hilarious.
I did, right. That was, what would you call that game? It was kind of like PC Stupid. Game porn. I don't know, it was like soft porn
it was
sort of.
Porn.
Did
she actually
take
totally
anything porn. Off? It was porn.
Did she take it off? I don't remember. Yeah. She did? Oh, I didn't get that far in the game in any way.
Wait, I can go home and check my strategy guide from when I was a kid. Right. Yeah.
If you that's can still pry those pages guide. Apart.
Oh, that's
too far. Too. Where is the fucking pig?
I think probably the highlight of that collection was all the original Ultimas.
Oh, yeah.
Some of them were with the cloth maps.
They came with Moonstones. Moonstones.
Yeah. My favorite games of all time,
Dan. Well, I didn't make them, but thank you. No, you deserve it.
Jeff, okay, what's better, 5, 6, 4, 5, 6, or 7?
Seven is
or
my
seven
favorite.
Or 7 part 2 with the lesbian counter.
7 is my favorite, but 5 is probably second to me.
Did you play 9?
I unfortunately did play 9.
I'm sorry.
That was kind of a trick question because it was broken. It wasn't playable.
Oh, I played all the way through 9. It's terrible. 8 is terrible also.
Pagan and Ascension, right?
That was 8.
Eight is like a single-player game, bizarrely, awful.
So would you guys, since we got sidetracked there, especially you two since you're super fans, do you ever dream about like what would a new remake, what would you like from that series? What would you like from the Ultima series?
Just like I got. Skyrim.
That is a cop-out answer. That is a cop-out answer. That's what you want.
Well, you're happy. I would love Ultima 7, basically. I would love that kind of giant world in a 3D space, but that's what Oblivion and Skyrim are. I mean, that's as close as I'm going to get, I think.
Jeff, what PC games do you remember fondly that you think just, like, nothing out there is doing, like, what they're doing now? No one's out there doing now what they were doing then.
Well, I don't know. That's sort of, it's like, those games are so old that I don't think that they would actually translate well.
They might.
You know, I think about things like Fantasy General, the games from like SSI, you know, turn-based strategy games, things like that, that I just don't know if kids would play them today. Maybe they would.
Well, I think if you got the right take on it, they would. I mean, that's kind of the Skulls of Shogun gamble, right? Is that there's a way to change the way that you look at those games and still pull back those mechanics.
Yeah.
Good game mechanic.
Sure. Actually, what I wanted to say was the talk about Skyrim, to me, as an old-time PC gamer, it's really kind of surreal, Bethesda's like success now, because those of us who have been around for a long time, Bethesda was like this kind of ultimate dorky, like super niche, hardcore.
Arena was not a big deal at all. I mean, Daggerfall was.
Daggerfall was the first one.
But then Redguard was lame. Like, yeah, this franchise was not the story, like Ultima, that, you know, it is now.
It was not. I mean, even for PC gamers, it was hardcore. So it was really, it was Oblivion, I guess.
Yeah, that Oblivion came out.
Morrowind.
Actually, Morrowind, yeah.
The stuff I miss,
Like, whatever happened to, like, space combat games?
Yeah, X-Wing. Those
Wing Commander.
X-Wing versus TIE Fighter. Give it to me.
Or even better, like, for me, it's like, LucasArts, make Scum games. Make new Scum games, LucasArts. Yeah. Make Zach McCracken 2.
The other thing, I mentioned this on Pactor's panel earlier, sorry. But one of my old favorite games was Interstate 76. And I don't think there hasn't been a really great car combat game like Interstate 76 ever since then, or the MechWarrior games, for that matter.
Yeah, definitely. So since you guys were talking there a lot about deep involving role-playing games, let's move on to this next question. Unfortunately, the asker did not include their name, but it's a good question. It's like, what would it take you to get you into an MMO? Most players tend to want something different. And Jeff, you can wrap us up, because Jeff's been the most, I think, of all of us, most into MMOs. Both you two guys. You guys wrap it up at the end. For us, what would it take to get you into an MMO? I know for me, the answer is that it would be really difficult to get me back into an MMO, because I was into World of Warcraft enough that I know on the backside of it that I enjoy more playing different games and more different games than having a game that pulls me back every day. Oh, I need to go back there. Oh, I need to go back there. Oh, I need to go back there. But at the same time, if I had the right mix of friends playing, you know, I think the social element is probably the piece that really has to click to get me back into an MMO.
We're done.
You're done?
I'm done with MMOs.
Completely done.
Except for Old Republic. Which I'll be playing on day one.
Star Wars.
There's a spew crack out there that tastes really good. I really want some of it.
If they hide an X-Wing versus TIE Fighter minigame inside Old Republic, that would give me...
Yeah, it was too... When I was really heavily into WoW and EverQuest before that, playing other games, I would feel guilty that I wasn't playing the
exactly.
MMOs.
Right.
You would never feel guilty that you weren't doing your job for me.
it just felt too much like I had to play this game, and I was letting down my friends if I wasn't playing this game. You know, it was just too much. It was too guilt-inducing.
I'd have to be 19 and back in college.
Yeah.
They'd be like, then just not go to class.
Yeah. What if someone gave you an MMO where you could play it in a more sample sort of way?
Say you can do that with WoW too, but you're like, I could either do my taxes or do a raid. What sounds more fun?
Taxes.
To me, especially
peasants.
Taxes.
Yeah. So Luke, what's going to bring you as the former Scarab King on your
Scarab
server?
Scarab Lord, get it right.
Scarab Lord, sorry.
I think it's probably the same thing that I'm hearing from pretty much everyone who spoke so far, which is it's about finding a game that like weaves into your lifestyle, and a game that doesn't require you to invest 35 hours a week, or a game that marries really nicely with like that you can weave into your life rather than having it run your life. And I think that going forward, I hope that MMO developers think about things like that.
Yeah, I don't know what you mean by get back into an MMO, because I'm going to get into a bunch of MMOs. I saw Guild Wars 2 here, and I'm ready to play that. There's like 12 MMOs that I'm dying to play. Old Republic, I will sink hours and hours of my life into. Is there going to be one that will be what WoW was to me, which was one ring to rule them all? I don't know. I don't know if that can happen anymore. I think the landscape is too broad now. I think that there's too much competition, and there's a new shiny thing on the horizon all the time. And the thing that's so crazy to me, especially being here at PAX and seeing all these games back to back to back to back to back, is how much content is in so many games. You can play one of these games and specialize in that game and play it for months. And yet every week there's a new huge world that's being unleashed, you know, that I want to participate in. So I think that's the real thing, is the challenge is that there's something else that's going to steal me away from all these great experiences.
I think it's going to be really interesting to see, A, how Star Wars does, and B, the continuing proliferation of free-to-play games that are better than what we've started to think originally free-to-play games were, because free-to-play games have obviously completely changed complexion in the last 18 months. So, since time is an important part of consideration for how much we game, especially as we get older, we have, you know, other constraints on our lives, Austin asks, how do you guys separate playing games for work from gaming for fun? Who wants to tackle that one?
It's kind of a daunting question.
I think we should start taking questions from the audience.
These are from the audience.
Oh.
That's why they wrote them down ahead of time.
I think we should get a new audience.
Single file, guys. Just go to the... So I just reviewed Deus Ex on PC, and I mean, that is a game... I kind of get stuck with this sometimes because I'm one of the only guys on staff that has a PC that's... how much money do you think it cost me, John? To a couple thousand?
$7,000?
$7,000 for a PC. So, I mean, I played that. I love you, man. So, that and Fallout New Vegas, I mean, these are huge, huge titles that I would like to play on my own. And I think that, you know, I would like to go and explore every single nook and cranny. I remember playing Fallout 3 just for fun and getting every single achievement. And when you have a time crunch or when you have, you know, a game that comes to you late and you're trying to meet a deadline, you really want to make sure that you get a good balance of everything you're supposed to see, as in the story, and all of the stuff that's additional to that, like the side quests. So it's really hard. I mean, for me, when I play when I play games just for me, then it's about exploring at my own pace, whereas you're kind of fighting the clock sometimes when you're doing it for review.
I think that's been brought up a number of times. What about the rest of you guys? How do you separate them out?
The biggest relief for me of getting out of games journalism was now I can just play the games I want to play. You know, I don't have,
yeah.
You know, one of the things about being a journalist is like you have to spend hours and hours, and sometimes it's hours and hours on a piece of shit, right? So everybody else is talking about what some great new thing they're playing, and you're stuck playing some piece of crap. So now I only get to play the things I want to play. So I think I'm playing more games now that I'm just sort of a real gamer again and not having to do this stuff professionally. However, I do have to pay for them now, and that sucks.
that does suck.
Shane, you're nodding your head. Have you found the same thing?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have as much time as I thought I would have for gaming for fun, so I'm very selective. But yeah, having to buy games is kind of weird. They're expensive. But I'm happy to not have to play like 20 games a month I didn't want to play.
So I guess I'm just crazy because, I mean, even when I'm playing a game that I wouldn't necessarily have chosen to play for myself, I still feel, I mean, I still get this, you know, yeah, I'm playing this game and it's 2 a.m. and I owe copy on it by noon tomorrow, but I'm still playing a game for work. I'm still getting paid to be playing a game. That's pretty freaking awesome. I'm still pretty tweaked by that. I still get pretty excited about that. And so it still keeps me motivated. And then the other thing is I always keep, I don't know if you guys do this, but I always keep one game going that I'm playing for myself, even if it lasts like forever.
Years.
Yeah, you're like, yeah. I'm still playing that game.
Yeah, like remember Yakuza, it. Like Yakuza 4? Yeah,
no, that would be Yakuza 2.
No.
That's like the game reviewer equivalent of a hooker not letting you kiss her on the lips. It's like, this is for me. This is from what I love. Am I right? No? Okay. I don't know what that means.
I just don't even know how to touch that one. You blindsided me with that. Michael asks, with regard to reviews, and this is specific to a recent reviews for Fruit Ninja Connect, that many people said it wasn't worth $10. If in the recessionary times we live in, where people become very monetary conscious, if reviewing games has changed complexion back to this idea of, well, how much fun do I get per hour, and how relevant do you think that is to game reviews? Billy, you are answering first.
Well, I do think it matters. I mean, you know, I grew up in the years of the Atari and had to mow lawns and mow a shitload of lawns to buy like Centipede or something like that. And I do think that value proposition matters. Like, it all depends if you feel like you, at least in my opinion, I think if you feel that you got enough bang for your buck, then it's all right. Like, Call of Duty's a 5-hour game, 6-hour games tops. But
multiplayer.
Well, okay, single player. But single player, it's, you know, $50 or $60 for a single player. And I don't play a lot of multiplayer, so I don't feel like I get a whole lot of. Yeah, exactly. That's a good point. The 3DS.
oh, which, by the way, speaking of Pactor came up to me last night and he was like, yeah, you were right, I owe you a dollar.
But I felt
that on his panel today.
He did today?
Yeah.
Props to Pactor for that. That's badass.
Yeah. This is an inside joke that nobody gets.
They may know. Like, Michael and I had a bet from E3 2 years ago on how much the 3DS would be. Mm-hmm. And obviously it didn't sell and came down to the price that it should have been in the first place. For once, I was Luke.
You're right.
Yeah, but you made a bad bet. You bet $1. Take that dude for more money than that. He makes a fuck ton. Are you kidding me?
You should have bet him that for $179.
Like, did he show up at his panel with like grills and like a little Wayne outfit and just throw money at people when he walked by? That guy's got more money than Jesus on Sunday afternoon. Are you kidding me? Nice.
I think Pactor's more like Baby than Lil Wayne.
All right, so back to the review thing. What do you guys think? Is it going towards that? Here's another question for you.
I don't think it's going towards it, but I think if you feel like you got enough, you know, bang for your buck for the game, like, as I said, Call of Duty, I beat the game in 5 or 6 hours, and I don't play multiplayer, but I still had enough fun with it, so it didn't really bother me. But if I, you know, paid $60, I don't think I got enough out of it.
Billy, we're old. Call of Duty isn't a single-player game. Like, we just look at that. Nobody
but
else
I said that I got enough out of it.
Like, half the people play online before they play single player.
I'm aware of that.
This is why it's difficult for reviewers. Like, they really shouldn't be in a position because of these time constraints are unique to individuals. Budget restrictions are unique to individuals. So it's difficult to say this is worth your $60 because your $60 might not be the same as my $60.
True.
Okay. And what should Uncharted I play in one sitting? Both games. One sitting. I did not have a problem.
Were they worth it to you?
And it was fucking awesome.
Right.
And what should we do with reviews for games such as World of Warcraft? World of Warcraft had a review score put on it. Okay, how many years ago did World of Warcraft start? Seven years ago? So 7 years ago, someone sat down and put a review score on World of Warcraft, and yet there's still 12 million people playing it. How relevant is it? How should we look at that? How do we look at League of Legends? This is something John and I were talking about earlier today. How do you look at a League of Legends and put a review score on it and have it be relevant, and how do you even talk to the people about it?
This is just a whole separate panel, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is, because it's such a difficult topic. Computer
your magazine,
gaming...
You would re-review the games from month to month. You would.
Well, what we decided to do is we decided to review patch releases, and we would treat those as sort of like, okay, if they're adding this much new content and they're changing the game dynamics this month, maybe it's enough that the score actually is different than it was when it released. Because, of course, WoW Now is nothing like the game that it was. Nothing that it came out. But it's a really hard thing to do because, of course, when a game is new, everyone wants to know what the score is, right? You had to review WoW when it first came out. But even at the time it came out, there was no way that any of us as critics could have played it long enough to get a high enough level to where we were seeing the bulk of like the really serious content. Reviewing MMOs is just a really, really tough thing.
Let's do. So, what was the name of that thing that you really liked, Jeff?
Sorry.
What was the other Jeff? The MMO that you really liked.
The MMO you liked. What was that, Jeff?
WildStar.
So WildStar. Right. So when WildStar finally ships, let's have a show of hands. Who, when the day that ships, who wants to see a number on a review for that game?
Wow. Okay. So if you're looking out in the audience right now, or you want to know, there are maybe. Wow.
Yeah.
One dude put his hand up and changed his mind right quick.
That was peer pressure.
Yeah. I saw that shit. Yeah. You can't
he
hide
was
that.
Shamed into putting it down.
It's that guy right back there in the back corner.
I don't believe that's honest. Honestly, I think this audience, I feel like it's not cool to say, yeah, we want a number. I really don't. Do you guys really don't want to see a number? Honestly? Nobody?
Recommendations. The Twitter buzz in the first week.
That's
the
fascinating.
The Twitter buzz, the podcast, I'm over numbers and letters. I want to hear people talk about it. I want to hear 140 character summations of it. Because that's where you get the why. Like, why do you like this? Why am I playing this?
Do you guys think that this audience is representative of the majority? Or do you think this is a specialized audience?
It's pretty specialized.
Well, you are here, so yeah.
I don't see a lot of dude bros.
Golf clap for everybody. Yeah. All right, so well done.
A smattering of applause.
I didn't prep you guys on this, but since we're coming down to the end of this, we have a new thing we do on Weekend Confirmed, and that's the finishing moves. If any of you wants to, since obviously, how often do we get to like talk to these guys right like this? Then you guys have like a parting shot you want to throw out there? Jeff does.
Fuck 3D.
I think they agree with you.
Wow.
Yes, and it counts.
Who's going to follow that?
Anyone want to try and follow that up? Andrew, are you leaning in?
No.
Really, you guys have nothing else? Like, that's it?
That was so good.
That
was good.
All right, I love every one of you for coming out here tonight. Please give a big round of applause for all these guys who are the esteemed alumni. You know, it's because of you guys listening to us over the past, John, when did we?
10 years?
30 years.
When did we start, John? seven years?
2005.
6 years.
So 6 years. For you guys listening to us, especially, you know, any of you, whether it's 6 months, 6 weeks, 6 years, thank you so much because you let us do this. We wouldn't be here if it weren't for you. And those of you listening at home or wherever you're listening, thank you so much. That is your PAX 2011 confirmed and your weekend confirmed. And until next week, we are Ghost. Get my voice heard, open these airwaves. All I gotta do is give me some airplay. Show you that I love you, show you that I care. Show you that I listen, show you that I'm here. I showed you all of that, I showed you everything. I gave my all to y'all, following those are 3 rings. You know more about me, anyone will ever know. In my love for you, I'll never let it go. You're the thing I ever wanted, you're the thing I ever needed. But I'm still struggling, still competing for your love, your heart, and you. Always be together, never be apart. Even from the early start, I'll do anything for you. Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is free and available now for iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices.